Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I have learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. We see the universe from a human perspective, which considers minerals as not having life. But every natural phenomena has a spiritual entity within it. As such, the mineral world is as alive as we are. Since that is the case, is there a beneficial relationship we can have with minerals? Our guest today is Nicholas Pearson, and he thinks crystals can help solve many of our problems. Nicholas has been immersed in the aspects of the mineral kingdom for over 20 years. He teaches crystal and Reiki classes throughout the U.S. and is the author of The Seven Archetypical Stones and Crystals for Karmic Healing. Nicholas Pearson, welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Tell me, what got you interested in crystals?
You know, even as a really small child, I was the kind of kid who would pick up stones, rocks, just anywhere that I went, whether it was a state park or my grandparents' neighbor's gravel driveway. I loved getting my hands on rock. And then at the ripe old age of 8, my grandfather gave me my first piece of quartz, and suddenly rock was no longer this dull, inert substance, but could be this beautiful prismatic gem, and I've been hooked ever since.
Now let's talk about gems and crystals. What's the difference between a gem and a crystal?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a great question. A lot of times, especially in the body, mind, spirit community, we use a lot of these words interchangeably. A crystal is any usually solid substance that has a repeating or periodic structure, and it must be, have the same composition throughout as well. So minerals are naturally occurring inorganic crystals. So these are, you know, the things we think of when we think of quartz crystal or, any other number of mineral substances. A gem, on the other hand, is any substance of geologic origin that we use for ornamental purposes. And then we have a few other non-stone gems that are organic, that are just sort of honorary gems, things like coral and amber and jet and the like.
Are minerals alive? Do they have a spiritual entity within them?
Well, are they alive in a classical sense? No. But do they have some sort of life force or energy or consciousness? Yes. And, you know, in my experience with them, in my worldview, I really believe that there is an animating force to all of creation, whether it's the world of form that we can see, touch, smell, hear, and so on and so forth, or whether it is just beyond that realm of form. So, you know, by that rule, then all members of the mineral kingdom have that sort of spiritual essence to them that gives them, you know, some sort of vigor or vitality on a non-biological level.
But they have a consciousness? Is that what you're saying?
More or less, yeah.
Okay. To me, if something has a consciousness, no matter how low on the consciousness scale it is, you know, I put that in the alive category. But I guess it's all on how you define it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, scientifically, they're non-living substances. In order for a mineral to exist, it must be inorganic and not created by life in any form, way, or anything like that. But there is a life beyond that biological sense. And that's, I think, the thing that has made the mineral kingdom so enticing to humanity since the dawn of time.
I would agree with that. What's a birthstone? Are they important?
The modern system of birthstones that most people see was invented in the last century by jewelry companies. Birthstones do have a very ancient tradition, very ancient lineage, but they're different everywhere you go in every century. So I think far more important than a stone that you read in a book that is good for the month you're born under is the stone that you can develop a personal relationship with.
Okay. Artificial crystals, they make diamonds and such like that in the lab. Are they different than one you'd find in the in nature?
On the one hand, the properties of any crystal are born out of its crystal class, its inner geometry, its morphology or its outer geometry, its composition, and then a bunch of other factors. And in man-made substances, all of those factors are identical. And if they're not, then it's a totally separate crystal. So the vast majority of what generates the energy of a stone is the same in man-made stones. That being said, they tend to feel kind of like a blank canvas. They feel new or young or maybe even inexperienced because they haven't had all that time incubating in the earth that a natural stone has. So they're great to use if you're attracted to them. If you're not attracted to them, that's fine too.
Are crystalline structures aids to spiritual growth?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
How so?
So everything in the universe generates its own sort of pattern or wavelength, its own signature. Human beings, because we are biological systems, we are made out of a whole spectrum of different wavelengths. And that spectrum changes shape and form and color depending on what we eat and think and feel and where we go and who we're with. And we don't have energy fields that tend to be very coherent or very synchronized. Whereas if you look at a piece of quartz or maybe a piece of apatite or calcite or kyanite or hematite, because their structure is so orderly, so perfect, without deviation, they produce these energy fields that are just absolutely perfectly coherent or synchronized. And so they actually entrain or teach our energy fields to embody that same level of coherency. And when we change something on the immaterial plane, there are changes that occur on the physical plane as well.
If you look at a crystal, they have, and there's various types of crystal structures, right? There's cubic and three-sided and hexagonal and such. Are the shapes of these crystals, is that important? Or is it the structure itself that's important? Is it the form?
Yes to both. I think the first things that define a crystal's energy are its composition and crystal class. And the crystal class just sort of describes the way those atoms, ions, and molecules from which it's comprised arrange themselves on a microscopic level. And then secondary to that inner level of geometry, which is, whether it's cubic or hexahedral or any of those other crystal classes, would be its external shape. So something like quartz, for example, takes a lot of different external shapes. But no matter what that outer form looks like, if you magnify it, it always reveals that same inner structure, which is always congruent, no deviation. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a crystal. So both matter, but that inner structure matters more.
Could a quartz be... what is a quartz? Is it isometric, or is it trigonal, or can it be any of those and still be quartz?
So in order for any mineral to be what it is, it has to belong to a single specific identifiable crystal system, and in Quartz's case, it belongs to the trigonal subclass, which is sometimes totally separate from and sometimes a part of the hexagonal crystal system. When you look at its unit cell, it forms these little tetrahedra, which are, you know, think of them as pyramids with a triangular base instead of a square base, and they sort of form together, made out of silicon and oxygen, and make this long spiral chain, and it's a hollow framework of silica. And if you were to change that chain at all, or change that unit cell, it would no longer be hexagonal in cross-section when you look at a crystal, and it would no longer be quartz.
Okay. Now, how about colors? There's all kinds of different colors on the crystals. What impact do the colors have on it?
When you look at your average book, especially when it's geared towards beginners, you get the impression that color matters a whole lot. But when you look at what's actually going on a chemical and optical level with any mineral, you see that color is much less important. One of my teachers, Naisha Azian, she's the co-author of The Book of Stones. She says that as far as that whole spectrum of energy emitted by any crystalline substance, or any other substance for that matter, color only accounts for about 1/14 of its entire energy. So color is not a whole big chunk of what you experience with crystals. Now, psychologically, there may be a deeper impact because of the sort of, you know, acculturated beliefs we have about color and, you know, the memories that we create and the way we experience color. But as far as the actual wavelengths that we experience from the gemstone itself, it's a very, very minute amount.
You say that crystals can heal. How do they heal, and what do they heal?
Oh, so this is a topic I've been doing a lot more research on the scientific side for lately. And if we want to break it down to physics, I mentioned earlier that all forms generate energy fields. And there are the sort of airy-fairy woo-woo kinds of energy fields that we can't measure with science yet. That's subtle energy. But we also have things that, you know, if you have sensitive enough equipment, it registers on the electromagnetic spectrum and it creates an electromagnetic field. So living tissues tend to produce coherent energy fields when they are healthy and incoherent energy fields when they are not so healthy. And because we are, you know, living beings with so many factors influencing our well-being at all times, our energy fields don't tend to stay coherent throughout the day. When you introduce another energy field that is more coherent, it tends to have a higher amplitude. And, frequency is like, it's the number of times that if you look at the actual waveform that any energy is making, it's the number of times that it repeats in a given measurement, whereas amplitude is the actual height of that field, how far away from that center measurement it comes. So you can think of frequency as the station you tune into, and amplitude is how loud you set the volume. So when you bring something in with a higher volume, it actually takes that lower volume energy field and brings it into harmony with it. This is what we call entrainment in physics. So with something that's so rigid and regular and perfect, its amplitude is naturally higher than something that is not so rigid and perfect and precise. So when we take any sort of mineral into our energy field, it begins that process of entrainment. So this is going to affect our, you know, energy anatomy, which trickles down to the way we feel. That changes our brain chemistry, which changes, you know, our body chemistry. That changes the things going on in our body. So really, crystals heal on many different levels. We can experience it on that sort of biophysical level. We can experience it on that psychological level. And we also experience it first and foremost on the spiritual level, whether or not we're aware of it.
So what it's doing is it's taking our energy and amplifying it? Is that what it's doing?
It's really a case of just teaching whatever station that we're set to be set to a more coherent station. So it doesn't have to necessarily process or change or alter our own energy field. It's like a template, a blueprint, that when we're exposed to it for long enough, we naturally begin to emulate.
That's interesting. You talk about karma a lot in your in your book, and talk about karmic healing. What is karma to you? How do you view it?
So karma is basically the sort of like the universal system of debits and credits that just record the progress of our soul's evolution. Karma comes from a Sanskrit word, karman, which just means deed or action. So karma is not some sort of cosmic retribution device. It's simply the measure of cause and effect.
So you see it as more of a learning tool than a reward and punishment system.
Exactly. At the soul level, there is no such thing as good karma or bad karma. There is karma that supports your forward momentum, and then there is karma that tells you you have a lesson to revisit. That's really all it is. When you take the ego out of it, when you take, as Eckhart Tolle calls it, the pain body out of it, there is no good or bad. It's just merely, is it moving you forward, or is it helping you learn a lesson that you need to master before you can move forward?
So if that's the case, then how can crystals heal the karma? If it's a lesson we need to learn, don't we still need to learn that lesson?
Absolutely, we do. And in my second book, Crystals for Karmic Healing, I kind of go through a bunch of different ways that crystals can assist us. You know, in some cases, they might be reflectors. They might be the thing that just shows you what the karmic lesson is, because lots of times we repeat mistakes or repeat lessons because we just don't want to look honestly at what there is to learn. So it's not so much that we are resistant to the learning part as we're resistant to the honesty part that is a prerequisite of that learning. And in other cases, what the stones can do is just give us the energy to push against the eons and eons of karmic energy that we've built up. Think of it, like an object moving with a lot of inertia. It's hard to push back against it. So even when you start to make the positive changes because you recognize the lesson, you've identified it, you want to take the right steps, if it's like a salmon swimming upstream, it can be exhausting to make that change. So other crystals give you the opportunity to do that. Still others, especially those that contain lead, they work kind of in a congealing way. Imagine putting lead in living tissue. It slows everything down, and if you put too much lead in, it slows it down to the point of death. Well, on a karmic or energetic level, it works in a similar way. Lead-bearing minerals have this strong Saturnian influence, and Saturn as a planet is revered as the lord of karma, as the reaper. What you sow is what you reap, therefore it's a karmic activity. But when we use lead-bearing minerals, they slow down the karmic patterns, so that way we actually have time to correct our course, to learn the lesson and adjust, because some things, life just happens too quickly and you can't adjust in real time and still have success. So crystals are there to be catalysts. They don't learn the lesson for you. They don't eliminate the lesson that's meant to be learned. They're just there to help you get that lesson in the amount of time you have available.
So they focus the energy required for that lesson to help you digest it or absorb it or whatever. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in many ways that is.
Yeah. Do you see karma as between us and the universe or between us and someone else?
All of the above. We can have personal karma that we generate from our day-to-day experiences, irrespective of our relationship with those around us. We can have interpersonal karma, it's what we have as a learning tool from relationship to relationship, whether it's parent to child, or, boss to employee, or stranger to stranger. We also have the karma of our family groups, our soul groups. Some of this can be sometimes called genealogical or ancestral karma, and it's the karma that we actually inherit from those around us. We have our national or large group karma, and then we even have our planetary karma. Because you've signed up to be here on Earth, you've agreed to participate in these karmic patterns, and therefore, whether you're consciously aware of it or not, it is your spiritual responsibility to make the world a better place and resolve these karmic issues. That's why we're here.
So that's the global karma that you're referring to.
Precisely.
That the planet has.
Yes.
Yeah. What's a karmic cord?
So anytime we experience some sort of learning opportunity through our karma, sometimes these little energetic tethers can occur. They exist on one end, where we are, wherever we are, whether it's in time or in place. And then the other end of it is sort of tied to that karmic experience. So it might be a cord that you have between you and another person, like maybe a past romantic relationship that didn't end well. It could be tied between you and a traumatic event. So although we experience time as linear, you know, from the higher perspective, all time is simultaneous. So it's very easy to draw this sort of energetic tether between you and, you know, that moment of trauma. And these cords exist because we have this unresolved karma. And every time we bring it up or experience something related to it, it's feeding back into that original causal point, that original point of origin. So one of the healthiest things that we can do for karmic healing is to cut through these cords, to release them and then transmute them so that way we're no longer attached to whatever the source of that karmic pattern is. So long as we're attached, we're going to keep perpetuating it, whether or not we believe we're making positive changes in life.
How do you know if you have a karmic cord?
Well, chances are you do. So it's just a matter of figuring out where it's attached to you and what that other source would be. So in the book Crystals for Karmic Healing, I give an exercise for locating and cutting through some cords. You can develop sensitivity to actually palpate them, to sense them tangibly in the aura. And then with the right stone, maybe a piece of selenite or flint or obsidian or a laser wand, you can actually slice through them and, you know, make a lot of progress, spiritually speaking, with a very simple activity.
Do you need to have a certain crystal for each type of karma that you've got, or would one crystal do all your karmic cords? How do you know what crystal to use?
Well, for cord cutting, you know, it's one of those cases of form follows function. So you want something that's sharp and blade-like. So as long as you've got at least one stone that meets that criteria and resonates at that sort of law of cause and effect level. So there are a handful of ones that would be great. Initially, the ones I already mentioned, kyanite is a great one. Smoky quartz might be good because it's just a really powerful stabilizing stone in general. As long as you've got one good cord cutting tool, you don't really have to specialize any further than that. You're welcome to. Some cords might respond better to different types of minerals, but with persistence, you can cut through anything.
Okay. Soul contracts. What's a soul contract?
You know, to me, a soul contract is sort of like a temporary agreement. It's a clause that you might add to your spiritual blueprint or template that applies to this particular lifetime. And it might be an agreement you make between your soul and another individual's soul. It might be an agreement that you make only involving your soul. Like maybe you take a vow of poverty for this lifetime, or you've chosen that you'd like to enter into contract with Source to experience debilitating illness or a traumatic injury, or, you know, a really horrendous pattern of relationships. Soul contracts can be positive as well. They can be things that, you know, this lifetime you're going to be a, you know, Fortune 500 CEO, or be a world traveler, or be fluent in 17 languages. So these are sort of the lessons that we've selected for this lifetime. And when one is no longer serving your highest development, you can, with the right tools, sort of, you know, etherically speaking, tear it up and toss it in the incinerator and rewrite the agreements.
Who determines if this is for our highest good? Is it our subconscious? Is it our soul? Or is it our conscious mind?
I mean, ultimately, that's $1 million question, isn't it? I think this is a case where you just have to use your best judgment. If something is really coming from the conscious level, there's a good chance that ego is involved. And your ego is only ever looking out for one thing, your ego. So we really need to come from that higher level, whether you want to call it your higher self or call it Source, God, Goddess, the flying spaghetti monster, whatever it is. We need to come from that higher perspective so that way we can take the ego out of the equation. And, you know, sometimes there are lessons that we think we're over and we're really not. A friend of mine, reading a book that he wrote, he quotes an old axiom that if if it's only taken you a week to a month to learn a life lesson, then it wasn't a life lesson. So it's one of those cases where if something is really pervasive in life and you're finally clued into it, then that's probably a case of that's a life lesson. And if you're really sincere about it, you know, miracles happen every day. You're able to turn something around in a single day, but it's not because your ego said it was getting its feelings hurt. It's because your soul says, all right, I'm ready. Let's do this.
What is the difference between the ego and the soul?
So ego comes to us from Latin, and it means I am. It's your way of relating to the material plane. You know, there are people who've killed their egos. You can look at Eckhart Tolle, see him in interviews. He doesn't act or behave or speak like an ordinary human being, like the rest of us who are still in that ego state. And it's not a bad thing to have an ego. It's a bad thing to identify with your ego. The ego is the small self. It's the false identity that we have that is looking out for itself. Originally, it was a tool that was meant to help us stay alive here on the earth plane. You know, earth is rough. You've got, predators and danger and poison and all sorts of things all around you. And the ego is there to keep you alive. But when we misidentify ourselves, when we confuse the real identity, the spiritual self or the soul, with the ego or the small self, then we run into problems because we're no longer doing things to better our soul, we're doing things to better the ego. And that often comes through the experience of pain, of lack, of limitation. The ego only knows itself because it can separate itself from the rest of the world. And so long as you live in that separation consciousness, you can never truly experience the boundless nature of your true identity.
Is the ego the same thing as the personality, or is it an aspect of the personality?
That's a really good question. I haven't thought about this really far in depth. They're definitely related. I think you can have a personality and still kill your ego. Even the word personality, even the word person, comes to us from Greek persona, which means mask. It's the identity that you wear, and in that case, it's very egoic. But I don't think they're necessarily the same thing. One may be a product of the other, but it is certainly possible to explore them independently.
See, I view the personality as a rather small aspect of the soul. I think the personality is what fits inside the human body, and the soul couldn't fit in it. It's just too grand. So the soul would before an incarnation, the soul would say, okay, I'm going to take certain energies and put it in this personality, which will fit in the body, and allow the personality to go deal with these energies that I would like it to go deal with. And then the ego being an aspect of that personality, and as you say, to keep it alive. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good analogy, a really good way of trying to map that out. Definitely the soul is far bigger than we can even comprehend here in 3D. And, it's not very far removed from creator, source, god, goddess, whatever you want to call this force. So it's just something that we can merely surrender to the idea that we will never know it in its totality here in 3D, and certainly not through the lens of our personality or our ego.
Yeah. You talk about such things as quartz crystals being record keepers.
Yes.
What record are they keeping, and how'd the record get in there?
There are a lot of different theories on this. So the term record keeper was created by my colleague and a woman whose works really inspired me, Petrina Raphael. In the 1980s, she noticed that there were quartz crystals that had these unusual triangle-shaped etchings or markings on them in relief, either raised or sunken into the surface of the faces at the point of a quartz crystal. And she noticed that when she connected with these crystals, they often seemed to house very ancient wisdom or information. And in some cases, it was pertinent to only her. In other cases, it was, relevant to a wider group of people. And her experience with them was that These records are left sometimes by ourselves in previous incarnations through our experience with the mineral kingdom. Sometimes it's left by the earth itself or by God, source, creator. And in other cases, it's left by, you know, members of our soul family or other people along that span of time. So they will eventually work their way down to us. And the only way to really know what's in there is to sit and meditate with it. And what you get out of that stone might be different than what I get out of that stone. In fact, I may get nothing if it's relevant to you and you only, or we might both tap into things relevant for only ourselves. So they're like doorways. They're ways to move into a consciousness where we can receive information that's relevant to our soul's progress. And oftentimes it's sort of past life relevant. It helps us understand and contextualize experiences that we have now through that understanding of our soul's progress from one incarnation to the next.
I have this crystal in my hand as I sit here. And it's a quartz crystal. It's about the size of maybe half of my foot. And it's very rough on one side, on the bottom side of it. And then it comes to a sort of a point where I would say there's 5 main, very, very flat sides that come to the point. It's not a real sharp point. It's a little dull. And then the sides of this crystal are very, very flat and smooth. Would you expect that this crystal came out of nature with these smooth sides, or did somebody make them smooth?
Well, without seeing the crystal myself, I couldn't tell you which is necessarily the case, because it's very simple to polish things, but crystals do form naturally that way in the earth. That's part of what being a crystal is. That internal geometry means that eventually, given enough space, it will create geometrical faces, flat geometric planes by which that substance is bound. So that doesn't require any shaping to do. Of course, man always likes to improve on nature, at least to try to. So you can take a rough piece of quartz that never got the opportunity to form that crystal. It ran out of space, or it grew into itself so much that it didn't have any room to create those faces. And so you can certainly add faces to them, either for aesthetic value or to turn them into a healing tool.
Yeah, I've had this crystal a while. So when I bought it, it was maybe 15 years ago. I just happened to be in a store. I wasn't particularly looking for crystals. But I looked at this one, and they said it was a record keeper. And it does have a few small little triangles on it, but I haven't done anything with it. It's a certain fascination that I have. I've kept it for this long, so I don't know what it means, if it means anything at all.
Well, ultimately, what you experience with the stone is far more important than anything you can read in any book. So, what it means to you might be radically different than what you might expect from reading my book or reading Katrina's book, The Original Source and Record Keepers. So it's definitely there, just waiting for you to accept that invitation to sit and meditate with it.
Yeah. What's a teacher crystal?
I've heard a few different formations referred to as teacher crystals. My take on it is a teacher crystal is any stone, any mineral, any rock that's there to offer you a lesson. So what's a teacher to me might be different than a teacher to you.
Okay. How about crystal balls? What are crystal balls?
Crystal spheres are something that have been pervasive throughout many eons in human history. We like to think of, perfect, optically clear, usually glass, crystal balls that, your fortune teller or witch might stare into to divine your future. But really, quartz crystal globes have been common for millennia, and they've been spiritual tools and symbols that sort of represent our ultimate descent into matter from that immaterial realm symbolized by light. which would pass through that globe and be condensed or focused in sort of a cone shape of light down to a single pinpoint. That's a metaphor for how our soul comes from the boundless light of the universe and is focused down to a single point where we are currently incarnated.
You talk about a fifth dimension in your book. What is that?
So in the material plane, we're currently in a third dimension. When you draw something on a piece of paper, you're looking at something in as two dimensions. A single point plotted would be one dimension. So, if we look at things like physics and string theory, they go on up through all these different dimensions. But, you know, they're with their spiritual counterparts, we look at the fourth dimension as being time. The way we experience time in third dimension is linear because our perspective is really limited. But from the next... That next level of organization up at the fifth dimension, which is where I believe our higher self is, maybe not our whole soul, but something that's a step above where we are now, that's where we experience a lot of our spiritual activity. And from the perspective of the fifth dimension, you can see all time as being simultaneous. Just like from the perspective of the third dimension, you can look at a map and see the entire Earth, even though your physical eyes in 3D can't look around and see the entire Earth at once. You can only experience what's right in front of you. So, the fifth dimension gives us the spiritual perspective that we need to really master our karmic lessons as well.
So you, one of the things that you said that I thought was interesting, you said it's possible to change the outcome of any past lifetime in order to release karma. How does that work?
Well, it's possible, but it's not always smart to do. This is one of those caveat emptor situations. You don't want to just rush into things because you don't want to rewrite timelines unnecessarily. Again, Katrina Raphael, I'm a big fan of her work. She wrote about crystals that were called time links, and they have these additional faces that are sort of parallelogram shaped, and they work as not just doorways to look into past or future situations or timelines, but they provide the tools necessary to rewrite them in order to release karmic influence. Now, you're probably not going to go through this type of meditation or do this sort of healing exercise and come out of it and see that history textbooks have been rewritten. Time is a very permeable thing, and you know, from that higher perspective, we can jump from one timeline to the next. So we can experience the healing in a separate timeline and still bring it back to where you are in physical embodiment right now. So to do that, you really need to do your homework. You need to be a pretty sound meditator, have a good relationship with the crystals that you're doing, maybe practice some of the simpler, safer techniques that are described in Crystals for Karmic Healing, and then kind of work your way up to it. It's not the kind of thing for the faint of heart. You don't want to change a timeline because you think you want a different outcome. That's probably your ego talking. You may not end up liking that outcome. So it's definitely a good idea to work with maybe a qualified past life regressionist or a crystal healer that's got experience in that realm before diving in on your own.
Yeah, I would think you could, when I look at the past life regressionist, I think of somebody that will take you back into past lives, understand what the issues are, and then bring that issue forward and deal with that issue in our present timeline.
Yeah, and sometimes just witnessing the event is enough to set the wheel in motion to make change happen. And other times, there's a lot of residual work left over. Once we know what we have to change, it doesn't necessarily fix itself out. So, it's always good to have someone who can be your mirror for you and be objective in that role of being the observer.
Yeah. Do planets act like crystals?
Yes and no. There are a lot of things that are on planet Earth that are not crystalline in nature, and they have other functions and other roles, but in order for something to be a rock, it needs to be comprised of minerals. Minerals, by their definition, are crystals. So large portions of the Earth are are made of crystalline structures. Even the very, very, very center of the Earth is said to be crystalline iron. So, the total energy field of the Earth is affected by or generated by many of the crystalline structures within it. We can also think of the Earth as an organism, though, in which case those crystals are merely organs within the entire organism. And it's that larger animating force, that larger soul of the planet that each of its components work towards, hopefully in harmony. But if you look at the situation on planet Earth, it's clear that some organisms, namely human beings, are not really operating according to the blueprint, the grand design for the whole planet.
You bring up blueprint, and you talked about it in the book. What is our spiritual blueprint? What is it?
The spiritual blueprint is kind of like the template or the map of your soul. Everything that exists has its own blueprint, down to the tiniest subatomic particle and out into entire galaxies. And this blueprint is really just sort of like the design for that formation to come into existence. So your soul has its blueprint on a large scale, and then even on an individual scale, what you call the personality, that has its own blueprint too, just like every cell in your body has its own blueprint. It's the spiritual instructions that are set forth for it to follow. And, the wonderful thing about this is Creator doesn't write into your blueprint that you will be broke, that you will be emotionally stunted, that you will go hungry in life. The only thing written into your blueprint is your highest potential. It's just like looking at an acorn. An acorn has all of the instructions it needs to become the mightiest oak tree. The blueprint is not written into that acorn to fail. So if we want to experience healing on the most profound, soul-driven level, then we can go to where our blueprints are. We can use the sort of stones that support retrieving this information and use it to correct our course. I would say upwards of 95 or more percent of all of the difficulties and challenges we experience in life come from being out of sync with our blueprints.
How does our soul plan and our blueprint, how do they interface?
You might even say that they're more or less one in the same. Our blueprint is the term that I use to describe that plan that is created for the soul. So, that entire spiritual progression from the very first time we differentiate or individuate from Creator to the time when we've achieved all the evolution that we needed to master in this dimension or any other and are sort of assumed back into the Godhead. All of those things are driven by a blueprint itself. So, there's a blueprint for every level of organization, from the entire universe down to the tiniest particle. And each one sort of needs to be in harmony with the next one up.
Now, you say when our spark is released from the source, it travels through seven archetypal colors or frequency planes in order to be imprinted with colors or frequencies. What's that all about?
So this is an instance where I found a really interesting correlation between gemstone therapy, which is a special variety of crystal healing that uses real high-end, usually spherical-shaped gems, and the theosophical teachings. And the idea here is that you can almost imagine if God or Creator is this immeasurable, limitless white light. In order for that white light to become available to us, it has to be sort of stepped down. And the first thing that it does is it's like passing through a prism, and it is refracted into the seven incident colors or rays of which it's comprised. And each of those rays or colors or frequencies represents a different aspect of creation. And in order for anything to exist, it has to be enveloped in all of those rays. So in order for us to come into physical existence, or even for us to become fully fledged souls, we have to pass through each of these seven bands or seven wavelengths of energy. And as we do so, it actually creates the causal body, which is also called the memory body or the karmic body of your soul. So that is the first karmic activity you get, is getting this special piece of your spiritual anatomy that records all layers of cause and effect, all lessons that you experience from lifetime to lifetime.
You know, there are systems like the Michael system that comes up with these various cosmic principles, which are things like servant, king, sage, priest, warrior, etc. And there's seven of them. And I'm wondering, do these relate to these seven frequencies that we're talking about? Or aren't you sure?
You know, I've not worked with the Michael system very much. There's one book that relates gemstones to it, so that's really been my only exposure. I would suspect that each of those seven sort of archetypal roles may relate to a predominant ray. Just like in Theosophical teachings, you know, there's an idea that we have a predominant ray for each lifetime. In gem therapy, we use color rays rather than those sort of esoteric rays. And, you know, each ray represents a different biological system, a different lesson, a different spiritual message. And so we need to master all the available lessons through all the different combinations of weak rays and strong rays from lifetime to lifetime. So even if those seven archetypes from the Michael system don't represent a single ray, they might represent specific combinations of ray energy that occur from one incarnation to the next.
Yeah, right. I would feel that way too. You know, we're in this cycle, and we break from this, our spark breaks loose from from the source, and it goes through this cycle, and it eventually gets back into the source again. Does it, in your view, does it continue to break out again and do another set of adventures? Or haven't you thought about it from that perspective?
You know, I'm really undecided on this. I think it's kind of like a case where, waves are there as they individuate from the ocean, but they're never separate from it. So although the idea is that we can kind of transcend the need, the requirement to undergo physical incarnation time and time again, and just be able to stay within source, I don't think at any point we're ever separate from source. So, maybe we continue to experience that on finer and finer levels. I really think that here in the human experience, we are confusing ourselves as being only the wave instead of being the whole ocean in the wave. So, for me, the jury is kind of out as to whether we still have to do it, but maybe we're allowed to choose to do it.
So I think free will goes right from the very, very, very beginning, and I think we don't have to even live this life. I think we do it because there are things that we think we can learn from it and gain from it. And so I think everything is choice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, as beings that come into existence, we definitely are given the power of free will. Whether you're the tiniest speck of dust or a whole planet, there's free will involved. Even minerals, rocks, gems, crystals, they have a certain amount of free will, and really the only decision they make is to come into physical existence. That is their one and only free will choice. Everything else they do is an act of service, which is what makes them such potent catalysts for healing on a causal level. When their only decision is to be of service, and they're generating massive amounts of good karma, which helps all other beings just to be around it. I'm sorry, you're breaking up there. Can you try that again?
Yes. Have you ever been involved in the three laws of healing, which is unconditional love, non-attachment, and intention?
I've never been exposed to them in that particular context, but those are three things that I do deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. Because I think those are kind of key to healing anything, and it's kind of higher principles, if you will, and not that easy to attain, quite frankly. I mean, just take the first one, unconditional love. It's very easy to love your your family and friends. Loving the terrorist requires quite a bit of open-mindedness, if you will, that a lot of us probably don't quite reach that stage yet. Non-attachment is another tough one, but clearly something that needs to be done. I find them interesting principles to ponder over and to try to absorb, but not that easy to fully conquer or come to grips with.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're pretty much run out of time here. So Nicholas, tell us, what you're up to, and how people can get in touch with you and find out what you're doing and where they can find your books.
Yeah. So to start with my books, my first two books, Crystals for Karmic Healing and The Seven Archetypal Stones, are available everywhere you can find books, your local Barnes & Nobles, hopefully your local metaphysical store. We want to go and support those small businesses too. You can find it on Amazon, at innertraditions.com, my publisher's website. My third book will be out this fall. It is called Crystal Healing for the Heart, Gemstone Therapy for Physical, Emotional, and Spiritual Well-Being. And next year, we'll be launching my fourth book, which is my first foray into writing about Reiki, the healing system that comes from Japan. You can find me on Facebook. My official page is The Luminous Pearl. Very shortly, I'll have a website launched, theluminouspearl.com, and I'll be doing a lot of travel and teaching to promote these tools, get them out into people's hands, so that way we can use the power of the mineral kingdom for transforming our lives inside and out.
Nicholas Pearson, thanks so much for being with us, Nicholas. You've done a lot of interesting work. I read Crystals for Karmic Healing. I would recommend that if you're interested in crystals at all. It gives you a broad view of I think, an important subject. Thank you so much for being with us, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website. I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.